Let me go ahead and introduce our speaker. Usually I leave a little more time to for conversation around the table, which is really, really important to get to know each other. And so I apologize for cutting that a little short. I've got a 9:30 meeting over in Marketplace, and Brian, turns out, has a 9:30 meeting, too, with his wife, right? Okay, good. So we both have important places we need to get to. So let me introduce our speaker. Brian Dobbins, LS, co-founder and managing partner of Land Answers LP. Land Answers offers many surveying, consulting, and professional layout services to general contractors, grading firms, architectural firms, engineering firms, land planners, and traditional homeowners. Brian is an alumnus of Southern Polytechnic State University. He has over 20 years in the land surveying industry and has served in many different company roles from the bottom up. Brian has extensive experience in the surveying consulting fields, from managing large construction projects and complex transportation infrastructure projects to the plight of the everyday homeowner. Brian and his wife have recently moved to the Polo Golf and Country Club and previously lived in Cherokee County. He is an avid golfer and outdoorsman with a passion for history and exploration. He spends his spare time with his wife riding motorcycles, researching history, and finding that occasional artifact. Brian was invited last meeting by Chuck Burnfield, his neighbor, and we had a round-the-room discussion about what's your favorite job and why, and Brian had a really interesting talk about his passion for surveying, and so I asked him then if he would mind telling us the rest of the story, and so he was gracious enough to do so. So thank you, Brian, for greeting the men today. Please welcome Brian Dobbins. Great.
I didn't realize I had done all that stuff, so that was pretty cool. Let's see. First of all, coming last time, it was really great to hear. You know, there's a lot of wisdom in here, whether y'all want to acknowledge yourself for it or not. Those of you who served and did all those amazing things, I'm just blown away by. You know, I get to do a pretty cool job because a lot of people come before me and, you know, provided the opportunity. So I'm appreciative for that. I do land surveying. Let's see, first couple jobs I had was, you know, ditch digger, washing dishes, cleaning toilets, digging ditches some more, things like that. And one day a buddy of mine was like, "Hey, I got a pretty cool job you can come do. You can show up kind of sober and, you know, you do the best you can and you know, it'll kind of." And from that point on, that's the only job I've had for over 20 years now. That was in, I was 17 years old in high school, picked it up, run with it ever since. You know, I'd always I've always admired all the history that goes into a piece of land, you know, what it was before, families that have owned it, how it came to be, you know, things that happened before anybody wrote down any history that we have, because it's all around us. And, you know, I've been in downtown Atlanta and they've cleared for a high-rise hotel and I found, you know, arrowheads. I've been in places that look like trees are 200 years old and you get out in the woods and there's an old farmstead. It's just amazing to me that I get to do a career like that, where I get to really get into things that, like, a lot of people have forgotten. So surveying is kind of a mix of, there's kind of an art form to it, there's a scientific part of it, and obviously there's the mathematics involved with, like, coming up with a solution. For the average person, you know, they're really just interested in, hey, where's my property corners, my neighbors, ridiculous. And that's when I get out there, and sometimes, you know, that's a tough spot for me because, you know, I tell them sometimes, I was like, you know, you get to a point with some people, if God himself showed up and said, hey, here's the line, one of them would be like, nah, you got that wrong. So those are the kind of things that I deal with on more of a daily basis that you may see. But in a larger sense, you know, you know, county boundaries, you know, your districts, your land lots, and all these things were set up long before any of us come into like having our own little piece of the pie. You know, all these areas were a part of the Cherokee land lotteries in the 1820s, 1832s, where basically, as everybody knows the history of it, they came in, rounded everybody up, took them out west, and gave out 40 to 160 acre land lots to everybody. And they did it under hostile circumstances. So most of this stuff was actually never surveyed. They just did it on paper. So a modern day survey, if I have a killer day, I'm going to go out and I'm going to survey 10 acres. We got guys in the 1830s, you go back and look at the land records, these guys were surveying 100,000 acres a week. Wow. Completely impossible. But, you know, these documents became our historical records for basically all these counties that have set up. And what you might find interesting is a lot of county boundaries have just came into existing by which county had more money or who had the more connected government, bureaucrats. And in the past, you know, it was whoever had the rivers was basically in control, you know. And more modern times, it's who's got the interstates, because commerce is going to really drive the counties that are going to be the most powerful. It's interesting to me, and what I found is going all over this state, because I'll cover the whole state, you'll go into a town that would have been founded. There's a couple of small towns in between Griffin and the interstate, for example. Griffin was probably one of your most powerful towns when they decided to build the interstate. You know, your Herman Talmadges, all those people were from that area, these big politically connected names. And they were like, absolutely not, don't ruin my town by running that interstate through here. So they pushed it over there, you know, coming up through Stockbridge, where I grew up, and over out, you know, way to the east of them. And basically, because they did that, you know, those towns have kind of lost their influence. And now they're kind of like, you'll go through there now and they'll be forgotten pieces of history. There's a couple of towns I've been through in the past where they've had four governors from a town. The town has 300 people. I mean, I would love to live there. I mean, that's a pretty good chance you're going to be the governor. I mean, it's pretty amazing stuff out there. But for me, I went to, there's only one school in our state that offers land surveying as a major, and it was Southern Poly. When I got there, they convinced me to take civil engineering, and I did it because, you know, it always helps to know more than you'll ever do in your career, and, you know, sitting down and engineering things, not really my thing, but like making things on paper a practical reality, totally enjoy that, you know, taking bits and pieces of, you know, you could call it philosophical, works on paper, but, you know, making it work, it's just kind of, you know, takes a little bit of skill. Same as you guys in the construction management, stuff like that, making things happen. There's a couple of things I picked up over the years that I always found amazing is, you know, surveying is probably one of your oldest careers in recorded history. You know, behind, you know, let's see, politicians, prostitutes, and, you know.
Same thing.
Yeah, you know, right? So, like, you know, and a couple of these picked out of the Bible was, you know, thou shalt not remove thy neighbor's landmark, which they of old time have set, and thine inheritance, which thou shalt inherit, and the land of the Jehovah thy God giveth these to possess it. And that's Deuteronomy. The princes of Judah have become like those who would move a boundary. On them I will pour out my wrath. Where were you when I laid the earth's foundations? Tell me if you understand. Who marked off its dimensions? Surely you know who stretched the measuring line across it. You know, I see these things, you know, and people are very connected to the land. I mean, we all know where we grew up, whether it's changed a lot or not. You know, everybody's got, you know, different pieces of land that have been important in their lives. And if you look throughout history, you know, some of the most important places that we think of were initially laid out by, you know, a surveyor. You know, you've got, you know, Arlington Cemetery, Robert E. Lee's plantation. You know, Washington, D.C. was actually laid out by George Washington. George Washington was a land surveyor. Abraham Lincoln was a land surveyor. Thomas Jefferson was a land surveyor. So essentially you got three surveyors and another guy on Mount Rushmore. So we got, there's a lot of really cool things that these guys kept in their notes, because they all kept notes. And a lot of what we know about what this land looked like when the Europeans actually showed up were based on the fact that surveyors kept a log. You know, Lewis and Clark were land surveyors. They weren't explorers. They knew where they were going. They just didn't know how to get there. Same with your guys who took a boat across the ocean. To me, I'm just blown away that those guys were brave enough to, like, you know, get on and go that way. And, man, we're going to see what we find. But we always know where we're going because we got stars to navigate from. And, you know, they sit here, they could do a math problem that would take up this page, and then you roll it out, and it would still be going just to, you know, do their sun shots and their star shots. And blown away. These guys, you know, we're out here surveying with handheld GPSs. You know, people think, oh, man, I know where everything is. These guys went across the country, you know, with a black powder rifle, eating beef jerky and drinking whiskey. And within 8 feet, that's amazing. I mean, it's just, to me, I'm blown away. A lot of that stuff's still there, you know. Abraham Lincoln surveyed the boundary of the Republic of Texas and the United States. And, you know, when they did that years ago, you know, those things kind of got lost to history because, you know, it became unimportant once it became a state. And they went back and looked for it. Well, you know what they marked the monuments with? Empty whiskey bottles. These are real things, you know. It's like, you know, that you would see manifest. You go down to the archives in Atlanta. There'd be manifests from where I talk about these land lotteries. You know, what they would do is go to the bar, literally, find the toughest dudes they could and be like, hey, man, we're going on an expedition. Like, you want to come with us or not? You know, we'll pay you whatever. And their manifest would basically be like going on the Oregon Trail. You know, it was like, you know, we're going to bring, you know, 50 pounds of beef jerky, 1,000 bullets, and 10 barrels of whiskey. Because, you know, they use whiskey for everything. You know, it was money, obviously drink it, antiseptic, you know. They didn't know where good water was, you know. I mean, it's just kind of like you kind of did what you had to do. And I find all that stuff. Now, more modern times, you've got GPS, you know. To me, the math involved, the brainiacs behind this stuff, you know, it's amazing because, you know, this math that they use for modern-day GPS, this was figured out like in Archimedes' times. Like, they guessed how big the Earth was and, like, fairly accurately, you know. And these satellites, 12,000 miles above Earth, you know, you take a bunch of them into existence, you shoot them down here. In fact, we can stand here and get within 3 or 4 feet. It's amazing. Even more amazing is the fact, you know, I can get a survey-grade GPS and be within, you know, that. You know, and it's just mind-blowing because, you know, we think about, like, you know, a penny not being important. But if I don't carry the seventh decimal place on something that's 12,000 miles away, I'll be off 50 feet. You know, and even this, the math involved with that stuff's mind-blowing, but we can do it in a second now with computers. These guys that I talk about, like, you know, your Lewis and Clark and your George Washington's and all these guys, just figuring out where North was, I mean, that takes skill. I mean, I don't even know, I couldn't do it anymore, but, you know, thank God I don't have to, because, you know, we've got more modern things to go along. Some of you may know, you know, North, true North, different than magnetic North. Magnetic North is always moving because of declination. So, you know, 50 years ago, I go back and survey a piece of property from 50 or 100 years ago, you know, they may have took a true north setting at, you know, whatever spot, but every mile I go up the road, you know, it's gonna have a bit of declination in it where it's gonna be off, say, a minute and a half. You know, you stretch that out, you know. That's why the boundary between Tennessee and Georgia isn't right. It's a mile and a half south. But, you know, But just because, you know, you can't really, those people paid Tennessee taxes all these years, you can't really just show up and be like, oh man, this is ours now. So we need those rights to the Tennessee River. There was actually, I cannot remember the name of it. There was a couple, the Whiskey Rebellion, that was something we all learned about. That was actually because a boundary dispute occurred because of taxes. There was actually, at one point in time, I forget, so the headwaters of the Savannah River is the boundary between Georgia and the Carolinas. Well, there's a dispute where the headwaters of the Savannah Rivers are, because it's actually two rivers. Ellicott's Rock is a famous place where he decided, you know, they hired a surveyor, Ellicott, and he figured out where it was. They actually formed up a militias and were ready to go to war with between two states in like the 1815, 1820, because, you know, the people that lived there were like, I live in Georgia, and don't you dare come over here and tell me I live in South Carolina, you know, or North Carolina, you know. They were like, they weren't having it, and they actually formed up. A couple shots were fired. No one got killed, but, you know, these are similar things like the disputes between the famous families up there, the Hatfields and the McCoys. Those are boundary disputes because, you know, surveyor come out, said this is what it is, and they were like, mm-mm. And that's just the way it goes, you know. I mean, you know, but there's all kind of like that stuff. So GPS signals, for the long and short of it, the function of their distance is the speed of light times the time difference. Basically, they all work on internal atomic clocks, you know, crystals, some fancy stuff. Y'all may know more about it than me. And, you know, these things are sent into orbit, and then their orbits kind of decline over time. So because they do, they've come up with, like, every year, you know, they got to get up there and you got to update your signals. And as a satellite's orbit declines, you know, there's different types of functions of math that you got to put in there to, like, keep your signals tight and everything like that. GPS has been around since the 60s. The military invented it. Originally, it was like Panasonic or Sony did it for not even the purpose that they used it for. And then the military was like, and they were saying even back then, originally when it started, they were within like 60 feet. Well, that's pretty good. I mean, you can drop a bomb within 60 feet, you're going to hit your target. Because prior to that, you know, you had guys, you know, I mean, even your navigation people on boats and in bombers, you know, during your war times were like plotting on a course. You know, they had to factor in wind speed, direction, the time it takes, how fast the plane's going and dropping something. And I was like, all that are functions of mapping and surveying, and all those things tie back into what I enjoy and what I what I've learned over history, how surveying's really tied down to a lot of things that we don't really think about. You know, math is really all around us in everything we do. I mean, I had some guys the other day drop a tree, and I was like, you're totally going to drop that on your truck. But he's like, oh, I measured the shadow, and I was like, okay. I mean, I know what you're doing works, but you're still brave. Drop it like a foot from his truck. I was like, you nailed it, man. But so some simple things that you probably don't know. You know, surveying, Gunter invented a chain in the 1620s. He was trying to reconcile the difference between the English forms of measurement based on the number 4 and, you know, the imperial system based on 10, you know, or what I call engineering scale and, like, a ruler. 12-inch ruler or in tenths. It's the easiest way to do it. And what he did, he come up with a chain 66 foot long. And if you think 66 is a weird number, well, you have never really thought about it, that you know, you've got 100 lengths in a chain. Each length of the chain is like 7.92 inches, which matches a millimeter. But, you know, they all equal 100, you know, it'll equal, you know, your 100 foot if you keep adding on to it. But it's a 66-foot chain. Let's see. An acre is 10 square change, you know, 43,560. A chain measures 22 yards, 100 lengths, 4 rods. There's 10 chains in a furlong. Used to be an important measurement. Y'all may remember the word furlong. Like, I've never owned a farm, you know, and a furlong was an important, you know, that's something that you would hear a lot in going out and working the fields, you know, a furrow, furlong. So you've got, you know, you got 80 chains and one statute mile, and a statute mile is a land measurement of a mile. And for 10 bonus points, does anybody know why a nautical mile is different than a statute mile?
It's easier.
Easier? Latitude. Boom. It's 1 minute of latitude instead, based on the circumference of the earth. I don't ever get to use that. They don't let me go surfing. Which one? I go deep sea fishing. That's one. That's about it. You know, in the past, I've seen some measurements. You know, you can measure in a pole or a perch. You've got hectare acres, four rods. Four rods is a chain. I mean, it goes on and on and on. Like, I mean, I'm not even going to go into all that, but. But I always thought, I was amazed when I learned why, you know, a mile is 5,280 feet. I was like, that's just an odd number to me. Like, why not make it like, and it's because it's a function of a chain, you know, and it's basically furlong 660 feet. And that matched very closely to a metric measurement over in, you know, Europe. And they brought that system over here. And that's the easiest way for them to reconcile it. Let's see what else I got. I mean, if anybody's got any questions, I'm open. That was just some small, interesting stuff. My surveying career has took me a lot of places. One of the places I most like going is down in Jekyll Island. You know, they're down there building hotels and stuff again. I don't know why I really enjoy it down there, but, you know, you get to see basically, in that area, you know, how the shipping industry started. I know, you know, the state of Georgia's had four capitals, and basically the reason why they've had four capitals, the first capital, anybody know where the first capital of Georgia was? Millersville was one of them before they moved to Atlanta. First capital was wherever Oglethorpe was. So it was in Savannah and on St. Simons. And then the second capital was in Louisville, Georgia, or Louisville, Georgia, whatever you want to call it, because they named it after the king. And that was prior to the Civil War. And there's actually these funny manifests about when they moved it. Basically, all they did was take the treasury, load it in a wagon, and drive it 40 miles. That's how you moved your capital back then. And they built a building for it, and then, you know, and it just became, and that just goes to show you, you know, how commerce really drives where your capital of any state's going to be until a certain point. And, you know, you've got different states where, you know, the capital of their state may be one of the smaller towns, just because historically speaking, that used to be the big town. And that shows you about, you know, Griffin was a very powerful town, and like, who goes, I mean, I live down there, but you don't really go to Griffin anymore unless you got to. Barnesville once was the buggy making capital of the world. And I went to Barnesville only because I went to Gordon College there for a little while. And that's just, does anybody got any questions about surveying?
Two things. One thing would be, what have you learned? And the second thing is, how do you tell young people how to find a job that has the passion that you do?
Well.
So what have you learned?
What have I learned? I've learned that, you know, getting into a career for all the wrong reasons might work out pretty good. Because I totally got into this job because they're like, man, you just, you know, because we were out, you know, having too much fun. And, you know, it's hard to get anywhere at 7 in the morning when you go to bed at like 6 in the morning.
Could I just jump in and add that there's a lot of wisdom in what you just said.
Yeah.
And it's about getting to work.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about being 26 and still trying to find yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find it if you're out there doing
yep.
stuff, not
yeah.
just waiting for it to happen. Yeah. I think that is...
Amen. I tell the guys, I try new guys out all the time. And it's tough. I mean, you know, there's the millennial thing everybody's heard about. But, you know, I think a lot of the problem with that is people have worked hard over the years to say, you know, if you don't go to college, you are just an idiot. And really, one of the hardest things to ever learn, in my opinion, is to get there and get out of the damn truck. Because, I mean, if you don't do that, you'll sit there all day long and think about how, man, this is going to be hard. Man, the weather's not nice. It's too hot. It's too cold. It's raining. I got stuff to do today. I don't know where I'm going. You know, there might be yellow jackets in there. I'm going to get bit by a snake. And I was like, you can bit by a snake in your backyard. I was like, you know, and it's just, you know, getting there and getting out of the truck is, you know, my guys all know that that's my only, like, mantra. You know, I don't have any tattoos, but I would tattoo that on me if I had to. You know, because, you know, that is the one thing that drives me crazy is, you know, I'll get guys that'll be new and they're like, oh, man, I love being outdoors. I was like, well, you may love being outdoors, but has someone ever given you a job that's outdoors? Because that'll change your perception of outdoors, you know. People like to go hiking. But, you know, hiking on a trail where everyone else has hiked is one thing. Making your own trail something else, you know. And I think about that, you know, when I used to go out and hack my way through the deepest, darkest Georgia jungle, you know, you're getting ticks and, you know, thousands and thousands of ticks been on me and mosquitoes and stepping on snakes and, you know, knock on wood, never got bit by any poisonous ones, only non-poisonous ones. I'm like, man, this is better than, like, you know, having people shooting at me in the jungle. So this is a pretty good deal.
I have a question. I'm sure when somebody contracts for your services, their job is the most important job, you know, that
yep. is
ever on earth. But for you, was there any one or two particular jobs that were personally rewarding that you so proud that you did
yeah.
the work and solve problems, if you could elaborate on that.
That's a good one. Okay. One of the coolest things I did was surveyed a bunch of Hartsfield Atlanta Airport when, you know, they expanded a few years ago. So basically, they were surveying a bunch of areas they were going to take, basically, you know, eminent domain. And a lot of these areas had, like, there's cemeteries and stuff like that in them. And they weren't 100%, you know, the heirs weren't still around. No one kept up with the cemetery. You know, it takes a lot of work to dig people up and move them. You got to send out the flyers. Somebody answers. You know, they can go, absolutely not, don't move them. Or they can be like, I want $10,000 to dig up my uncle, blah, blah, that I never knew existed. Because, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that you deal with. And I would literally, you know, be out there. And, you know, and people would be like, well, I'm just seeing if I know anybody in here, you know, like... You know, I was like, okay, I see, you want to check. But it was just kind of doing that, and, you know, up under Hartsfield, Atlanta, is the headwaters of the Flint River. That's where the Flint River starts. And my buddies, when they moved up from South Georgia, when I went to college with them, they were like, man, the Flint River, we take our boat out on it. And I said, man, you can step over the Flint River. It's a creek. I mean, it's this deep and 4 foot wide, literally, you can just step over it. There's nothing to it. Comes out from under there. But you can take a tunnel all the way up under Hartsfield for about a mile. We did some of that. You have to survey in there with glow-in-the-dark targets. You know, that was pretty cool. The other one was in, it was a family farm that their family had won the farm in the Georgia land lotteries in the 1820s, and they still had it all contiguous, 120 acres. It was in Dawson County, and it actually had one of the land lots that was actually surveyed, because it was right on the line of the, so the boundary of Georgia and the Cherokee Nation was the Chestatee River, as it came down. So they actually had a partial landlot corner that crossed the Chesapeake River, and they based all the sections on this one corner where they knew where it was, and they actually still had that corner, which is, you know, incredibly historic, but mostly forgotten. And I did a little bit of work where Macon County and the city of Macon and Bibb County argued over their boundaries because, you know, the Bass Pro Shop was a big thing for down there in Macon, and a lot of taxes were involved in it. And it turns out that they inaccurately showed on some old district maps that where the ferry was. And they hired a surveyor, a friend of mine, he's like 85, but man, he's got a wealth of these old vellum maps that are like hand-drawn. It's just like really cool stuff. Because one thing about surveying that a lot of these guys used to, if you got into an area and you had all the maps, well, you didn't have no competition. You know, you set up shop and you own that area for the lack of, you know, you were the man. Like, you know, and you kept those maps and you didn't have to record them in a historical archive. So a lot of this stuff got lost because, you know, there's been a big push more modern history to, you know, go record them. You know, record the maps. Don't just let them go away because, you know, most everything now started big and it got small, small, small. And now we got subdivision plats and everything outloaded. But those would be a couple of the coolest things that I've done.
I've got one question, and I'm probably going to offend somebody in here because I'm going to offend lawyers, bankers, title industry people, and everything else. So offend you, I'm sorry. But we bought sold pieces of land over our years many times, and I just came to a realization recently what a scam this is as far as title insurance goes. And I don't know what your experience is in having to go do title research, but I think about this and think, okay, you pay a lawyer to do the title research, and then the lawyer charges you to pay you for you to buy title insurance from the title insurance.
For the lender.
For owner's insurance, and then you've got to also pay for the lender to have lender's insurance, and it's all coming out of your pocket. Who in their infinite wisdom set up that scheme originally?
So this is what they did. There was always a bunch of talk about this. Used to, every piece of property transaction had to have a survey. This became cumbersome because there's not a lot of surveyors. There's like 600 of us practicing in the whole state. Average age is 67. You know, I'm 39. I know one other guy that's like 39, 40. Most everybody's in their 80s. Like, there's just not a lot of guys. So a while back, they just figured out the insurance commissioner got involved and, you know, the powers that be. You know, you had a lot of powerful developers. You know, Johnny Isaacson would be a good example. You know, I think he did a lot of this stuff. You know, so these guys figured out a long time ago, they're like, well, you know what? Basically, all the survey does for them, when you look at it from like, you know, if you want a piece of land or you want to do something, it's really just another stone that could block your way from getting the thing done, getting it sold. It doesn't really tell you a lot of benefit unless you're really looking to try to protect yourself. Well, a lot of these people, you know, when you get into real estate investing, you're really just trying to roll things forward. You're not like trying to set up your like life and your family like in this area. So they would try to like basically what they did was they got with the insurance commissioner a long time ago and basically made it to where they got written an exception. And the exception is to the survey. Now, in other states, Florida, everything has to have a survey. Alabama, everything has to have a survey. South Carolina, you got to have surveys. But, like, they don't have to all be for each transaction. You just need a modern form of a survey. In Georgia, they got rid of it mainly because it was, they were like, you know, a survey's $500. It might take 3 weeks to do. I tell you what we'll do. We'll just charge more for the insurance and not get a survey at all. And we'll just take the liability for that survey. Because odds are, in a neighborhood, you're really not going to have a lot of boundary disputes. I mean, you'll have people argue over like trees or who put the fence where, but you're really not going to have houses over the property lines. You're not really going to have somebody building a house on top of a gas easement or you know, stuff like that. So instead of forcing people to get surveys, they just wrote it under an exception, and now it's just they cover it. So your title insurance should be, you should not have to buy a lender's title policy. You're buying that title policy because you don't get a survey. Now, you can get that exception written out by paying for the survey, but you got to know what you're doing. Like, you got to talk to your attorneys and say, hey, you know, I'm going to get a survey, so I don't want that title policy. But they're not going to tell you because they make money selling you a title insurance policy. I mean, you know, I'm not knocking the, that's their job. That's cool with me. I know a lot of them. They're great friends of mine. But like, you know, they've got their business model. Boom, 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 boom. They're walking down the line. You know, for them, it's like, you know, they're trying to get your job done. You know, how many closings they got to do a day? I mean, it's a lot, you know, and I don't really go around like, you know, beating them up for it because, you know, they didn't make those decisions. They were made a long time before them.
Great.
Good?
Okay.
Awesome.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Awesome. Perfect timing. Well, good. Well, thanks for coming and get you a cup of coffee, and I hope to see you next one in three months.
Yes.
Thank you.